The next LOS requires us to distinguish between a point estimate and a confidence interval estimate of a population parameter. Point estimates are single sample values used to estimate population parameters. The formulation used to calculate the point estimate is called the estimator. The sample mean is a point estimate population mean. Confidence interval estimates result in a range of values within which the actual value of a parameter will lie, given the probability of 1 minus alpha. Here, alpha is referred to as the level of significance for the confidence interval, and the probability 1 minus alpha is the confidence level. For example, we might estimate the population mean of a random variable is in the interval 15 to 25, with a 95% degree of confidence, which is the 5% level of significance. The next LOS is to describe properties of students' t-distribution and calculate and interpret its degrees of freedom. The t-distribution is the appropriate distribution for constructing confidence intervals for the population mean when the variance is unknown. Students' t-distribution, or simply the t-distribution, is a bell-shaped probability distribution that is symmetrical about its mean. The t-distribution is the appropriate distribution to use when constructing confidence intervals based on small sample sizes, that is, samples with a size of less than 30, from populations with unknown variances in a normal or approximately normal distribution. It may also be appropriate to use the t-statistic when the population variance is unknown and the sample size is large enough that the data sampling distribution is approximately normal, as the central limit theorem says it will be. Students' t-distribution, or the t-distribution, has the following properties. It is symmetrical. It is defined by a single parameter, the degrees of freedom, where the degrees of freedom are equal to the sample size minus 1, that is, n minus 1. It has more probability in the tails than a normal distribution. We often refer to this as having fat tails, so the t-distribution has fatter tails than the normal distribution. And as the degrees of freedom, and correspondingly the sample size, gets larger, the shape of the t-distribution approaches that of the standard normal distribution. So, in constructing confidence intervals for the population mean, when the population variance is not known, we can use the t-distribution. As such, the confidence interval is equal to the sample mean plus or minus a t-distributed reliability factor times the standard error of the sample mean, which is the standard deviation of the sample divided by the square root of n. The next LOS requires us to calculate and interpret a confidence interval for a population mean given a normal distribution with 1. A known population variance, 2. An unknown population variance, or 3. An unknown variance and a large sample size. Confidence intervals are constructed by adding and subtracting an appropriate value from the point estimate. Generally speaking, confidence intervals take on the following form: the point estimate plus or minus a reliability factor times the standard error, where the point estimate is the value of a sample statistic of the population parameter, the reliability factor is a number that depends on the sampling distribution of the point estimate, and the probability that the point estimate falls in the confidence interval 1 minus alpha, and the standard error is the standard error of the point estimate. If the population is normally distributed with a known variance, then the confidence interval for the population mean is equal to the sample mean plus or minus a reliability factor times the population variance divided by the square root of n, where the reliability factor is the z-value or z-score that leaves alpha over 2, or the level of significance over 2, in the upper right-hand tail of the standard normal distribution. A z-distributed reliability factor is the z-value that corresponds to alpha over 2, where alpha is the desired level of confidence in the upper and lower tails of the standard normal distribution. For example, The Z-distributed reliability factor at the 90% confidence interval is 1.645. This is the Z-value that leaves 5% in each of the tails of the standard normal distribution. Similarly, the Z-value for the 95% confidence interval is 1.960. This Z-value leaves 2.5% of the total probability under the standard normal distribution in each tail of the distribution. And finally, a Z-value or reliability factor of 2.575 corresponds to the 99% confidence interval, or an alpha of 1%. We know that the Z statistic should be used to construct confidence intervals when the population distribution is normal and the variance is known, and that the T statistic should be used when the distribution is normal but the variance is not known. But what do we do when the distribution is not normal? Well, as it turns out, the sample size influences whether or not we can construct the appropriate confidence interval for the sample mean. If the distribution is not normal, but the population variance is known, the Z statistic can be used as long as the sample size is large, meaning that n is equal to or greater than 30. We can do this because the central limit theorem assures that the distribution of the sample mean is approximately normal when the sample size is large. If the distribution is not normal and the population variance is unknown, the T statistic can be used as long as the sample size is large. It is also acceptable to use the Z statistic, although the use of the T statistic is more conservative. What this means is that if we are sampling from a non-normal distribution, which is sometimes the case in finance, we cannot create a confidence interval if the sample size is less than 30. So, all else being equal, make sure you have a sample larger than 30, and the larger the better. The last LOS for this topic review is to describe the issues regarding selection of the appropriate sample size, data mining bias, sample selection bias, survivorship bias, look-ahead bias, and time period bias. We have seen so far that a larger sample reduces the sampling error and the standard deviation of the sample statistic around its true population value. Confidence intervals are narrower, which means they are more precise when samples are larger and the standard errors of the point estimates of the population parameters are less. There are two limitations on this idea of larger is better when it comes to selecting an appropriate sample size. One is that larger samples may contain observations from a differently distributed population. If we include observations which come from a different population that has a different population parameter, we will not necessarily improve the precision of our population parameter estimates. The other consideration is cost. The costs of using a larger sample must be weighed against the value of the increase in precision from the increase in sample size. Both of these factors suggest that the largest possible sample size is not always the most appropriate choice. Data mining refers to repeated use of the sample database to search for patterns or trading rules until one that works is discovered. For example, empirical research has provided evidence that value stocks appear to outperform growth stocks. Some researchers argue that this anomaly is actually the product of data mining. Because the data of historical stock returns is quite limited, it is difficult to know for sure whether the difference between value and growth returns is a true economic phenomenon or simply a chance pattern that was stumbled upon after repeatedly looking for identifiable patterns in the data. When reviewing research findings that suggest a profitable trading strategy, make sure you look for the following warnings of data mining. Data mining may be suspected when there is evidence that many different variables were tested, most of which were left unreported until significant variables were found. Another indication of data mining is the lack of any significant economic theory that is consistent with the empirical results. So, the best way to avoid data mining is to test a potentially profitable trading rule on a data set different than the one you used to develop the rule. Sample selection bias occurs when some data is systematically excluded from the analysis, usually because of the lack of availability. This practice renders the observed sample to be non-random, and any conclusions drawn upon this sample can't be applied to the population because the observed sample and the portion of the population that was not observed are different. Survivorship bias is the most common form of sample selection bias. A good example of the existence of survivorship bias in investments is the study of mutual fund performance. Most mutual fund databases only include funds currently in existence, the survivors. They do not include funds that have ceased to exist due to closure or merger. This would not be a problem if the characteristics of the surviving funds and the missing funds were the same. Then the sample of survivor funds would still be a random sample drawn from the population of mutual funds. As you might expect, however, evidence has shown that the funds that are dropped from the sample have lower returns relative to the surviving funds. Thus, the surviving sample is biased toward better returns. The analysis of a mutual fund sample with survivorship bias will yield results that overestimate the average mutual fund return because the database only includes the better performing funds. The solution to survivorship bias is to use a sample of funds that all started at the same time. Look-ahead bias occurs when a study tests a relationship using sample data that was not available on the test date. For example, consider the test of a trading rule that is based on the price-to-book ratio at the end of the fiscal year. Stock prices are available for all companies at the same point in time, while end-of-year book value may not be available until 30 to 60 days after the fiscal year ends. In order to account for this bias, a study that uses price-to-book value ratios to test trading strategies might estimate the book values as reported at fiscal year end and the market value 2 months later. Time period bias can result if the time period over which the data is gathered is too short or too long. If the time period is too short, research results may reflect phenomenon specific to that time period, or perhaps even data mining. If the time period is too long, the fundamental economic relationships that underlie the results may have changed. For example, research findings may indicate that small stocks outperformed large stocks during the 1980 to 1985 time period. This may well be the result of time period bias. It's not clear whether this relationship will continue in the future, or if it is of the time period chosen for the study. On the other hand, a study that quantifies the relationship between inflation and unemployment during the period from 1940 to 2000 will also result in a time period bias because this time period is too long and it covers a fundamental change in the relationship between inflation and unemployment that occurred in the 1980s. In this case, the total sample should be divided into two subsamples, one covering the period before the economic change and the other covering the period after the economic change.